Welcome to Red Alert Radio. Grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Greg Presland taku ingoa. I'm Greg Presland and this is Red Radio, and I have a very, very special guest with me today, Sir Bob Harvey. Kia ora to you, Bob.
Kia ora, Greg. Nice to be here. Excellent. And over the chilly morning.
Yes, it is. And over the next 30 minutes, I thought we'd try and jam together a whole lot of different topics. It's a shame we don't have longer, but...
Sure. I've had a few multiple lives, so just dig into them.
Such as radio. So the first I ever heard about you was back in 1972 when you were involved in the Labour Party campaign, which saw the election of Norm Kirk.
Yeah.
And that was an for me, I was 11 at the time, but it was an outstanding use of television and advertisement to suddenly have a very positive, uplifting political campaign.
Well, it was a very interesting campaign for New Zealand and Australia because it was a victory for Norman Kirk and for Gough Whitlam. And I'd worked very closely with the Australians to assist with their election, and they worked with me. And I came up with this thing called Make Things Happen in 1969. And I was kind of like the guru of elections, branding, if you like. But I remember I was at a meeting, and it was Arthur Faulkner, the member for Mount Roscoe, who said, really, we've had a gutsful of National, you know. We have to find a better idea to do that. And it's time for a real change. And I remembered that phrase, and I thought, it's time for a real change. That's bloody terrific, you know. And so I designed a campaign called It's Time for a Real Change. You know, it's time for better schools, it's time for better education, better health system, it's time for labour, it's time for a real change.
It was something that tugged at the heartstrings.
Yes, it's kind of that, yeah. And so we tested that here, and it seemed to me, and certainly Norman Kirk was very much part of it, and said, oh, I think it means it goes to what he called the splinter groups. Like, oh, yeah, really? Yeah, he said, yeah, that doesn't mean Labour. That means it's a real change. Like, get rid of those bloody Labour and National people. Go to somewhere like Environment or something like that. And I went, oh, yeah. And I thought, no, I've got this really fantastic idea. But I thought about it. I think I probably went to Karakari to run down the beach or something and thought, he's probably bloody right. So I got the scissors out and cut off real change and ran a campaign that looked, it's time for a change. Then, if you like, I took it to Australia and talked them into it's time for a change. And in that workshop, which I think went with we, and I think Gough Whitlam turned up. Yeah, we all think that that it was maybe we should go with it's time. And I love that because it was simple.
Just short and sharp.
Yeah, it's time. And I then came back and designed a campaign about Kirk and about the strength of Labour with It's Time. And then I could glue it on, if you like, to It's Time for Education. It's Time for Health. It's Time for Well-being. It's Time for the Environment, which I love beyond belief, the idea of an environmental campaign. Because I think Greenpeace, I've been starting to work with Greenpeace.
There's a great Manapouri Dam controversy
and
at the time, wasn't
and
there?
I'd done that. I'd done the campaign for Norman Kirk. He asked me if I would do the campaign. It was funded by people in the Labour Party. Yeah. Good on them. And so we saved Manapouri. And so it was the biggest petition, I think, ever sent to Parliament at that time. I think abortion, homosexual reform produce bigger. But at that time, Manapouri seized this country by the throat.
Mm. And it was a multi-levelled, it's a very simple slogan, but it's multi-levelled because it's time.
It's time.
And then it's for something. So it's people standing for something and trying to
achieve change. It worked on bumper stickers. It worked on the election there. And I went off, I think, at that stage and worked for the Kennedy campaign in L.A., which I really, really liked. That was Ted Kennedy. And I remember bringing back loads of ideas for that, like coat hangers with "It's Time" on it. We didn't finally go with coat hangers. You just ran down the streets and put them on letterboxes or on doorknobs.
Yeah,
"It's Time" on that.
People still did that now.
Yeah, and Kirk played a big role in that. And, of course, I just adored Kirk. He was fantastic. He was a wonderful client. Him and I would fight a lot. So if you read Margaret Hayward's book, he would ring me up and he'd change his mind. And I'd say, "Norman, it's too bloody late. The ads are all ready to go at the papers. I am not pulling the ad." Because I just run big full pages, "It's Time." And everyone knew what time it was and what we did. So it was a brilliant campaign. And I felt very, very proud. I think Dick Frizzell did a lot of the graphics. And Roger Donaldson did the TV commercials. Roger, who was a draft dodger from Australia, I might say, and lived with me up in Titirangi, we covered a lot of the riots, I have to say, in 69, which we cut into our TV commercials. So we pushed all the boundaries, used Vietnam footage, which was horrific, and into our television commercials for Labor. It stopped New Zealand in its tracks, and we got a terrific vote. We didn't get the government in 69.
That was a knife-edge result in the end, wasn't it?
Oh, it was, yeah. A few politicians had their bum kicked by Norman, who didn't take any prisoners, by the way. But he was a tower of passion for this country and vision. It was him that I went to the embassy, the Chinese embassy, on that Friday. I never thought how important that moment would be.
And then 74 and 75 ended in tears.
Tragic.
And Norman died.
Norman had died.
I remember
died
that day suddenly. Very clearly. The whole country seemed to shut down that day.
Oh, God. We mourned him. It was a dreadful, dreadful day. I remember being at home, and Barbara, I think, was feeding the baby. It was now about 40, about 45. And, God, somebody rang. Alan Hitchens rang, who I worked for the Sunday News, and said, "Norm's dead."
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God. I'd been to see him many times in Wellington. He was in the Home of Compassion, being annoyed and rung up by a guy who hated him and would ring up and say, "Are you dead yet, you bastard? When are you bloody going to die, you prick?" Things like that. And I'd say, "Oh, no, well, cut the phone off." After all, he was the Prime Minister. And he'd say, "Oh, I've done that." And that he just puts the buzzer through. And the tolls in those days would not stop a phone call to a dying Prime Minister by an angry, angry taxpayer. Isn't that amazing?
I dare to ask, who was it?
Eh?
Who was it?
Oh, well, it was quite well known,
but
he had Norman's number. And then he'd ring tolls and say, "Oh, my wife has left the phone off the hook. Would you put the buzzer through?"
Yeah.
And no one said, "Oh," they'd just say, "Oh, well, give me the number, dear." And so here was Norman in a hospital bed, alone, dying, and this guy would go through the night.
Wow.
I mean, you can't believe that kind of stuff. But that was the way New Zealand was.
Yeah. And then 1975 was another traumatic year with the rise of Rob Muldoon.
Yeah.
Any comments about that campaign? I remember the Dancing Cossacks.
Oh, the Cossacks. Well, that was a guy who was a great friend of mine, Mike Wall. We both lived in Titirangi.
Yeah.
And our wives were great friends, Carol DeChateau, a very fine writer, and Barb, my wife, were great buddies, and we looked after our children. So he'd go to the National Party Conference, I'd look after his kids. I'd go to the Party Conference, he'd look after my kids.
That's very good for you both.
Oh, well, we had a gentleman's agreement and to be friends. And I think I'd saved his life, actually, up north. He got into some trouble in the surf, and I dragged him back to shore. And I did like Mike. We were both runners, but we were both in opposing. Colenso had the National Party campaign. I had Bill Rowling. And Bill, who I thought was a terrific person and a great individual, was simply not up to it. He had no charisma, really. Muldoon had, he didn't seem to me to have a lot of charisma, but he had anger. And he was a Trump person. He was like a little miniature Trump. "I'll make New Zealand great again," and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Certainly, I had the honour of Muldoon loathing me, because with Sir Paul Reeves and Sir Ed Hillary, I'd started the Citizens for Rowling campaign. which was not a great campaign. New Zealanders didn't want that kind of influence, really. So the Dancing Cossacks was the nail in the coffin for Labour.
Yeah, in terms of tone, your 1972 campaign was uplifting and tucked at the heartstrings.
It did.
Whereas the Dancing Cossacks was very negative.
It was angry.
And tucked at the fear strings.
Greg, it sure did work.
Yeah.
It sure did work. And Muldoon worked. Muldoon was loved by the camera. He had a force of energy, and this is very important, you know. Jacinda has that. The camera loves her. The camera didn't like David Cunliffe. The camera didn't like Shearer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes, you saw them, but Key had a certain charisma. Helen had authority. I mean, I've known all the Labour Prime Ministers since 1966, I think. I knew Nash in the 50s, the 60s. I knew Nordmeyer. So me and Jonathan Hunt are the kind of the library of Prime Ministers, Labour Prime Ministers in this country.
Of the Labour statesmen.
yeah. And of all of them, you know, I had a great relationship.
So how did you handle Rogernomics in the 80s? What was your response to that?
Well, I knew Roger very well because I'd helped him with his campaign. He was the secretary of Brenwith Carpets, mm-hmm. and he was a great friend of Norman Cook. And so I helped do his campaign to get him into Parliament. And he awarded me the GST campaign.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a great warm relationship with Roger and his mother and father, Douglas. He was one-armed. He's had his arm blown off in the war. And so he was in the Kirk administration and a really fine guy, Norman Douglas. And so I had that family association. So I really liked Roger. And I liked Longy, of course. I'd help get him elected. I'd come out of retirement. I'd been banished by the Labour Party in a way, by Jim Anderton, who I really got on very well with too, but I had a fight over just the way that the campaign was handled internally, and they fired me. You know, they'd lost the power, and they're pretty unforgiving.
It's a dramatic time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
David and Roger's differences are well documented, but
oh yeah, the falling out.
And it was a time where David tried to bring the party back to its traditional approach to things.
Too late, the horse was out of the stable, yeah. And he did try, but David was also losing the plot too. There's no Mike Moore and I found David in his garage where he kind of did his work and slept out of the family home. Mm. And the caucus sent me and Mike Moore to see the MP for Mungaree.
Yeah.
And they were very scathing of him. They thought he was a clown because he was very funny. And I came back convinced he was a leader. And so they said to me, okay, Harvey, if you're so bloody smart, and this guy you think is so good, do something with him.
Yeah.
David was going to have a stomach operation in about a month's time, and he said, well, I'll probably be bloody dead. I'll be dead because 50% died because they just simply pulled the stomach out and stapled it. Now they poke things up, your groin and things, about the size of a pin.
Yeah.
But in those days, he had the full Monty, opened up the stomach and pull out the entrails and staple them together, about pull out 10 metres or something.
Yeah.
And the body can't cope with it. And the people died. Well, David didn't die. And we went to see him and he said, well, I'm still alive. You know, what do you want to do now? And I said, we want to make you Prime Minister. And he kind of started to laugh and said, oh, over my dead body, but that's not going to happen. And so we started to work with him. And our triumph and our shining moment was a year later, a very slimmer and beautifully dressed David Longy that had a great brain and a wonderful mind,
yeah.
and tongue, by the way, stood in Oxford and delivered an address that stunned the world.
Yeah.
And that was... Congratulations, Mike Moore and Bob Harvey, for finding the new leader.
Yeah.
Sitting on a bed in the back of a house in Mungere.
Yeah, he was my local MP, and my father, and at other times my mother were the chair of the LEC, so we had a lot to deal with him.
But well, he was fantastic.
Yeah, he's the reason I did law, actually. Yeah, he's an outstanding individual.
He was a powerhouse. And when he's dying, I visit him with, I visited him a lot, and he was pretty unhappy. He was unhappy with Labour because they'd refused a pension, I think. His pension, because he'd resigned about 3 months before the 9-year period.
Yeah.
And he, I asked Helen, would they give him the pension or, you know, continue that? And the answer was no. She wasn't very fond of David.
One of the quirks of history, isn't it? he had to deal with the fallout from Muldoon's very awful control of the economy. The economy was shot in 1984.
Well, Roger was up for that.
And all the decisions happened because of that initial crisis.
Yeah. I think Longy was a powerhouse. Mm. I just enjoyed his company. A lot of people didn't.
Yeah.
He had a biting wit. He was sarcastic. But captured the young. And I mean, he, like Norman Kirk, was so anti-nuclear, which I felt so strong about. But it was Norman Kirk who sent the frigate to Mururoa.
Yeah.
And it was David Longy who campaigned. Told me he didn't really totally agree on that approach. It came from later his lover, Mrs. Pope, and later his wife, encouraged him to do an anti-nuclear stance, which, of course, caused absolute shit fights with the Americans. And I couldn't say how proud I was of him with taking on America's might.
Yeah. So fast forward to 1993, and you become a mayor for the
Well,
first
before
time.
Then, yes, I did. I kept my ties with Labour, and I became the mayor of Waitakere City, and very clearly a lefty.
And what made you decide to get into local body politics?
To save the Waitakere Rangers. As simple as that. I had this burning desire to make an issue of the Rangers and the foothills not being developed as Auckland spread ruthlessly and mercilessly westward. As simple as that. I thought, who's going to try and save these Rangers from rampant development? I said that. Mm. And then into my office walked Peter Madison, who later became a councillor, and talked about the environment. And I didn't have an idea, Greg. I wanted to be the mayor, but I'd worked with Robbie, Kath Tizard, I'd worked with mayors, and I knew without an idea you were in Shedder's Ditch. And I didn't have an idea. And when Peter Madison walked in, I knew that Clinton was going to Rio to the summit. And I thought, yes, oh yes, it's dangerous, it's edgy, but it's worth it to create an environmental city, an eco-city. People call it an eco-city, of course, because it was hardly a fashionable term. And I had to dodge the, oh, just a bunch of stupid tree huggers, you know, sandal-wearing hippies. I had to wear all that kind of nonsense. And I said, it's bigger than that. This is an absolute vision for the way that we will live in the 21st century. Listen, we're talking about 1992.
Yeah.
And I designed myself and campaign to be an eco-warrior, modelling a little bit on Peter's idea of the Clinton. And I thought, Clinton will be the next president of the United States, and I will be the mayor of Waitakere City.
And one thing I thought you did very well is you coupled the pride in an eco-city with people being proud about being Westies.
Yes.
And suddenly you're a Westie, you wear a black T-shirt, but you also care about the environment, and you seem to link those two things
well,
together.
Well, I showed
very well.
Them. It was like I was a bit of a black magician, if you like, you know, and the dark side, because that's what advertising is, and PR is all about, you know, it's the other side, the black arts, as it's called. I became someone who revealed the city that people didn't see. They saw crime. They saw Tim Shadbolt. And I needed them to see a new me and a new city. So I unveiled the vineyards, for instance, the West Coast beaches, the glorious Waitakere Ranges. And people said, oh, is that out west? Well, yes, it is out west. So people were deprived of so many things out west. Yes. Hospitals, welfare, you know, you couldn't get a loan out west. You had to go into city to get that kind of thing. So we were marginalized. We were the wrong side of the bloody tracks.
And the film industry, which you've championed, that pours tens of millions of dollars into the economy.
Oh, I was so inspired by working on the piano. I'd been on the film commission, and so I knew how movies were made, and I'd produced documentaries with Ed Hillary, with Roger Donaldson, so I knew how to make a movie and make documentaries. I'm a pioneer of making documentaries. So I knew the film industry, and I was so inspired with Jane Campion's Piano, 3 times Oscar winner. And so when the opportunity came up to buy those sheds, and you were part of that, Greg, I thought, I'm going to make this work. Well, it's gone from strength to strength. And there's a couple of big movies, which I'm not allowed to mention, which I think will happen in the next months, which will be phenomenal. As they say in the movie business, bigger than Ben-Hur ever was, is heading our way. Why? Because of the movie industry.
So stay tuned, eh?
Stay tuned. Stay tuned, brother.
Now, let's talk about environmental protection. The Waitakere Ranges Heritage Area Act, that was something that you kicked off as mayor.
Took 20 years.
You saw through a very long, detailed process to get it through council and kick it down to Wellington.
Yeah, watched it to Parliament.
And watched it pass as a local
one vote.
One vote.
One vote got us over the line.
An MP who was subsequently jailed for bribery.
Yes, yes. Taito Philip Field.
Yeah.
Taito, I must admit, was my man. He got that one vote. It was opposed by National, of course, opposed by, everybody except Labor, I think, and the Greens.
It was very contentious at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was so obvious.
And what about now, 11 years on?
Well, I feel very proud for the Warriors, the eco-warriors that keep it in place. I'm devastated by Kari Dieback and just wrote a very big piece for Metro on that. I think there's a lot of problems with Kari Dieback, in research that need to be looked at. I don't think it's simple. I think it's been around a long time. It's complex. You know, in Titirangi, where we live, there's beautiful, live, healthy kauri trees against houses, against garages, you know. I mean, you drive down and you think, how does this happen? But it's very selective. And so I think there's a lot more going on under the soil.
Yeah.
About trees communicating, yes, communicating with each other, that we're just finding out that they're clearly in conversation with each other. Don't ask me how. New German research, Swedish research, Danish research is all about the life of trees underground and how they have this. They've been around for 25 million years, 250 million years. Not a bad lifespan on this planet. They know things. And I think with the Rahui, which I applaud, I think we now have to work on tree health and well-being.
So the Heritage Area Act has worked very well in stopping subdivision of the ranges.
Oh, yes. It's so important.
But there's always the next battle to face and the next crisis to
deal
with.
You never give up.
Yeah.
And we mustn't give up with the ranges and the foothills. Development of Auckland, the pressure on Auckland, we need absolute strong leadership. So 3 cheers to the council for going strongly with the climate change, but I don't know if they realise how important it is to manage that through every part of their process.
Yeah.
And Mayor Gough has got to wake up, as I did for the Eco City. It's not about a slogan. It's not about a brand. It's about absolutely making it deliverable.
So do you think that the region is missing out? Waitakere had Eco City as its the core of its
belief.
As our
mantra.
as the mantra. But Auckland City doesn't have that. It's much more diffuse, and environment's just one of the things that they think about.
Yeah, well, Aucklanders are pretty heartless, I think. You know, they care about themselves and their next coffee. It's LA, LA on speed, and I despair about how insensitive we can be to things that matter. The harbour, for instance, I've just written, here's a plug, here's an ad coming for my great new book called The Sea Edge, The Waitemata, and how precious that is. And, you know, we're being bullied by the cruise ship industry, which are absolutely a bunch of bully bastards. We shouldn't be putting that dolphin out there. The ports have seen their ways, if you like, and have withdrawn, which I'm so pleased about. The harbour and the landscape has got to be looked after and loved. So a message to Phil Goff, who wants to get elected, and I'm cheering him on. Hey, remember that Climate Change Act is really important.
Okay, we have 3.5 minutes left. And let's talk about the mayoralty. This super city mayoralty must be the most complex, demanding, difficult job in New Zealand politics. I mean, you just
think... In Australasia.
Yeah, you just think that Leon and Phil have both had heart attacks on the job, which is not a good sign.
Yeah, they should go to the gym more.
Yeah.
I just came from the gym. It's about leadership. And I think that Phil is what you might call a very safe pair of hands. But a safe pair of hands have actually got to do a lot more. You know, it's got, we are really up against in housing, in transport, and someone has got to make a clear statement that to run a city this size needs enormous, I think, imagination like we had in Waitakere, a clear vision and a commitment to spend.
And goodwill amongst all elected people, and
that's missing.
Not really there.
I'm so sad that somehow they've spent a lot of time wasting time feuding. It's a bear pit, and they've got to put on some big boy pants and act like councillors and not like fragmented villains.
And do the job.
Do the job.
Last couple of minutes. So the mayoralty contest this year is going to be fascinating. The first one, Banks versus Brown, you know, there's a certain amount of spice to it. Goff versus Tamahere is going to be a much more...
Well, I think that Tamahere, and I know that while we campaigned, he campaigned against my mayoralty, and I was successful. And then I got over that. I'm not commenting on John. I think he was extremely fine as the chief executive of Waipareira. You know, three cheers for that. He clearly has his eye set on the mayoralty, and he's a fierce opponent. And he campaigns in a very interesting style. And Phil better get some armour on, because it's going to be a bumpy night.
Yeah, and it could be a much more contested election than what we've had before.
Yes, and the person that gets that job, whether it be Phil or JT, as he's called, has got to be able to unite the council like we did. I mean, I had six wonderful councils. I had a bit of bumpy bits, but I learned how to love them to death and to work for a common goal, common vision for the people of Waitakere. A lot could be learned for that, for the people of Auckland.
And celebrate the 90% of things you agree about and fight to the death about
the
10%.
It's a glorious city with a glorious harbour and a glorious future, but it's got to be worked daily by leaders that care.
And finally, Bob, we're just coming up to the end of our time. What do you think is the biggest issue that the next super city council is going to face?
I would think the city, it's climate change. Climate change is bigger than just climate change. It isn't just a smart term. It means a lot in transport, health, well-being, housing. Climate change actually is the mantra, and it is the kōrewai.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you, Greg.
And nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa.
Get together next week at 9.05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.